the Vietnam War. It's over. Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
Dr. Homebrew is brought to you by Five Star Chemicals, providing safety and cleaning supplies for brewing, distilling, and winemaking at 5starchemicals.com.
Doctor, look!
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's Dr. Homebrew. And I was just complaining about my life.
You, JP?
It's never happened before in the history of this program or this studio or my life. I've never complained about a single aspect of my life.
Well, I always call him Mr. Sunshine, you know?
That's right.
Super positive.
Bye. I am super positive. I'm positive that this kid is going to kill me.
Hey there, Mr. Blue.
I just gotta go to the store after this, but we're not gonna be done for an hour, and then I have to edit these dumb shows, and then I have to go to the store and then drive half an hour home and then set up my new computer.
Well, there's always 24-hour groceries out there, man.
I'm not worried about like making it in time. I just don't want to do it. I don't want to get out of the car and like drag my ass into the friggin' store, and you know what I mean? Just that kind of stuff.
That is hard.
Normal
work.
Everyday dad stuff, right? Walking. That's hard, dude. That takes a lot of work. And
requires effort, yeah.
It
like
really does,
2 a.m. is like the golden hour, man. Everyone's asleep and you have plenty of time to set your computer up.
That's true. That's true. You're not wrong. Before we get into the beers we have today, I want to thank our sponsor, Five Star. You can go to 5starchemicals.com and learn about everything you need to make great beer at home. Brian Cooper, you know all about Five Star, right? You're going to help me out while I look for Scott's phone number?
Man, you got your PBW, you got your Star San. I mean, that's really, as a home brewer, that's all you need to know. I used to clean all my stuff with, when I first started brewing, I was like, I'll just clean it with hot water. And I was sanitizing with Iota Forge because that's what you did back in the day.
Oh, God, right. Yeah, I remember that stuff.
Kids these days will never know the struggle.
They make a product that is an iodine sanitizer as well, but the iodine one does tend to stain your equipment, and it is nice. You can see when it's mixed properly, but Star San, you just mix it up, and it foams a little bit. Oh, my God. Don't fear the foam, man. The foam is not your enemy.
Right.
There's very little left in the bottom of your fermenter. It's not going to cause any problem for
anybody. Fear it. Don't fear it, everybody.
Iota 4 requires some skill, which means it's bad for me. Mm-hmm. Star San doesn't really. It just gets stuff clean.
That's right.
It sanitizes things. It's good.
Which is good for me.
Yeah.
All right. What do we got going on the show here, Brian? We got... I see some of my favorite beer here in front of you, and I'm excited about that.
We've got some Guinness Stout coming up.
There we go.
And we've got some home-brewed beer. So, we're going to do a commercial calibration with Guinness Draft Stout.
And we haven't done this in a while. It's been a hot minute. What was our last commercial calibration? Wasn't it like Celebration? Or I think it was just an excuse to have the company buy us beer.
It might have been Celebration.
I think we did some...
Tell me you have a note on that. That would be amazing.
I have a note, yeah. Mm. In March of 2018, we did Barley Wine.
That was Bigfoot, I would imagine.
The Sierra Nevada Bigfoot. We did also later did some Backwoods Bastard and Alaskan Smoked Porter.
Okay.
Some Fuller's Vintage Ale.
Oh, that's right.
Prefontaine, the Oud Creek. We did some cool, fun stuff. But then we did so much all at once in like the middle of last year. I just got a little burned out on it. I just wanted to do homebrew.
Yeah. But now we're back, baby. Commercial cows every day. All day, JP's all show like, long.
Have we ever done Guinness? Have we ever done?
No, man. I don't think we've ever done Guinness. No,
I keep a list here. So yeah,
and that's the hard part about doing commercial calibrations. We want to try to find a beer that most people can get, if not everybody, right? But you know, sometimes it gets hard to be interested in you know Negra Modelo, which actually we should probably do Negra Modelo because that shit's real good.
It's a good beer.
We did it. We did it. Show number 24.
I bet we liked it a lot. Mm.
Yeah, we did.
I bet we really had a good time.
We did, yeah.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, man. Let's get Scott on the line here, and we'll talk about his cream ale. I'm excited about that. We don't get cream ales a whole lot. I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Sometimes.
You know, it would be interesting to get someone. Hey, Scott, what's happening?
Hey.
It'd be interesting to get some kind of you know data scientist or whatever to analyze the beer styles we've gotten over the years, Brian. Because I think this is show like 151.
Wow!
So what is that? You know, multiplied by two, that's like 500 beers. And I wonder like how the styles have kind of shifted because I feel like cream ales we never got, and then you know now it's I wouldn't say it's you know. Popular, but we've gotten more than one. But I'm excited to drink this one because we still don't have enough of them really to be kind of bored with it. You know what I mean? And that's where I want to be. I want to be so bored with everything that no, I'm kidding.
Here's another IPA.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, we talked to you. What was it last month or was it the month before? I forget now.
Oh yeah, it's like 2 months ago.
2 months ago. All right. Yeah. How's it going since then?
Well, good.
All right. We're just. Calling for a checkup, you know, prison is treating you well, I imagine, and
yeah,
I don't know. So you sent along this cream ale here for us to drink, and I appreciate that. You know, you're going to maximize the old shipping costs, but Brian Shaw is going to take us through Scott's beer first
on a magical journey.
We're going for it.
Yes, right. So I will preface this by saying when I was a lot younger, like when I was in college and I saw like the Big Mouth cream ale at the store, I always thought that was ale that was made with actual cream like
from
cows.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I was young and stupid, as opposed to being middle-aged and stupid now. So that's a big difference.
Well, you know what? working at Moorbeer, one of the best calls we ever got at the call center was someone trying to make a milk stout and legitimately blaming us for them adding milk into their wort. And
Oh, my God. That would have been disgusting.
Wow.
Yeah. So, right. You know, you're not the only one, Brian. You're not the only idiot in the world.
Nice. That's good to know. Yeah. So first off, nice label. At least your beer looks good. I really appreciate the label. It's really cool. Well done. That's really some good art. So that's a good start. Aroma, low aroma overall. It was sort of a low bready aroma. No hop aroma, no esters. I think it's pretty clean. There is some slight corn aroma. Maybe a little lower than I might have expected, but there is, especially as it warms up, I get some butter diacetyl, which, so I give that 6 out of 12 for aroma. And I'm pausing to shove my nose in this a little bit more again a couple of times. That's just what I do. So I'm I want to be sure to give it a proper diagnosis as a doctor of homebrew.
That's right.
Appearance, this beer is crystal clear. I can read through an inch of it. Pale golden color, medium head is persistent, 3 out of 3. So the clarity is excellent, excellent job on clarity on this, especially a beer this light. There's just no room for haze, despite you know, the modern haze craze and stuff. Cream ale ought to be you know, crystal clear, so well done in your process to make that happen. Flavor, initially the flavor is malty. I get more two-row. Some medium hop bitterness, perhaps a little too high for style. This is like an 8 to 20 IBU for bitterness. I personally kind of like it, but from the style standpoint, I get maybe a little more bitterness than is appropriate. Very well attenuated, so that's well done. Finish is balanced. get a little bit of cardboard and a little bit of the butter still in the flavor that was in the aroma. So gave it 8 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, body's medium, carbonation's medium. No warming. You wouldn't expect warming for a cream ale. It'd be quite a weird cream ale if there was. More perky than creamy. No astringency. 5 out of 5 for mouthfeel. For overall impression, this is a flavorful beer that I think in general is well made. The issues to me is a recipe issue and a diacetyl issue. It's maybe a little too much hop bitterness and flavor in this beer. You might want to back off maybe 20% or so, in my opinion, at most. It's not quite as corny or ricey as I expected. I'll be curious when we're done to hear if, because typically cream ale is going to have corn or rice in it. I perceived corn. I'll be curious if I rolled the dice and got that 50% correct on being corn. A little more of that flavor would be welcome. Then with regard to the diacetyl, temptation, especially at a really light beer with this that's so clear, is you want to maybe rack off to secondary really quickly to get it off the yeast. And if that's what you did, I would recommend keeping it on the yeast just a little bit longer, and maybe a few more days. You got to be careful if that's what happens. But again, we'll discuss your process later. But typically, diacetyl comes from you're pulling it off the yeast. It would be a little too soon. But overall, I'm still sitting here drinking this, and I gave this a 27.
All right. Brian Cooper.
All right, yeah. So I do agree, again, with a lot of what Brian had in his observations there about this beer. It is a nice label, and I have visited Scott. I know where he comes from, and he's a good guy. He showed me around in Honolulu. We went to Honolulu Beer Works. And,
oh, damn, cool. Dude. That's awesome.
And did a lot of fun stuff while I was out there proctoring an exam last October. So I want to thank him for that again.
Nice. You're very NPR today.
No, I just have bag on his beer.
No, you're very breathy and very
thank you. Yeah, it's coffee talk tonight.
Yeah. I want to tell you guys about the new sweater I got.
Yeah.
It's 100% organic lamb's wool. Have you heard of this? Have you heard about lamb's wool?
I have, yeah. Is it ethically raised?
It's ethically raised, yeah. It never got put to bed. It just went to bed on its own.
We'll have a 30-minute discussion about ethics after this commercial break.
Massages offer all the lambs, yes.
Sponsored by Jorge's Patchouli.
Go ahead, Brian, please.
Yeah, so in the aroma, I do get corn. I definitely think there's some corn going on here, some maize, if you will. Sweet corn-like aroma and rather neutral base malt with a background note of some diacetyl going on there. Low fruity esters, some medium-low kind of citrusy hop in there, it seems like. Light DMS so maybe just a touch vegetal, or else the corn combining with the butter is giving me the impression of a vegetal-like note.
I get that, for sure.
Appearance-wise, it is wonderful-looking beer, brilliantly clear, light gold-colored beer with a low white head, finer and some larger bubbles. Dissipates after somewhat short time, but I still give it full points for appearance because just that clarity is stellar. You can just read right through it, like Brian said. Flavor-wise, it's a medium-low malt. Corn-like notes. Basic kind of breadiness to the malt, not brettiness. Low citrus and slightly resiny hop. Medium-low buttery diacetyl, detracting from everything there. That was so nice to start with. Medium bitterness. Finishes semi-dry. The balance is definitely to the malt here. Slightly, diacetyl and corn lingering in the aftertaste there. Mouthfeel wise, it's medium light bodied. It's not super heavy, and it shouldn't be. I do get a moderate creaminess. Its namesake, if you will. No real warmth here. It shouldn't have any of that. A touch of diacetyl slickness. Not getting any astringency. It's really clean. and smooth drinking. It's just not quite as crisp as I'd hoped. You know, these beers just be really refreshing and just have a nice little snap to them and dry off the tongue. I think the butter is maybe causing that malt to just kind of linger there a little bit more than it should.
Yeah, a little sweetness. Yeah. Still kicking around, yeah.
Overall, it seems like a good cream ale. The recipe seems good. Just that very evident diacetyl inhibiting my enjoyment a little bit. Sorry, Scott. you know how to do a diacetyl rest, but yeah, definitely leave it on that primary yeast cake another day or two after it finishes fermenting out. Keep it up at 68, 69 Fahrenheit once the terminal gravity is reached and you're solid there. But yeah, I gave it a 26. It's good beer. It has just one minor flaw, you know, but it's one that I just, you know, it doesn't do the beer any favors, sadly. So, but I can tell what's behind it is really good, and it's a nicely brewed beer. Just cleaning up that butter, it's going to help it a lot.
Okay. Well, Scott, let's talk about your beer for a bit. Actually, can we get your recipe first, and then we can kind of jump in
with the guys? Absolutely. I'm sorry. It was a 5-gallon batch with 82% pale two row, then 9% flaked corn, 5% Vienna, and then 5% flaked oats.
Vienna? Huh. Is maybe, Brian, do you think that might be contributing? Doesn't it kind of give a little like sweetness thing? Do you think that could be contributing to... to some of that
the
after,
sweetness in the yeah possibly
yeah. And then for the hops, I did all noble hops. So for 60-minute rest, I did about 3/4 ounce of Saaz, and then at 15 minutes, I did 1/2 ounce of Saaz and another 1/2 ounce of Hallertauer. And then at about 4 hop rest, I did Saaz and Hallertauer again, both 1/4 ounce of each of those. And then I pitched 2 packets of Saffel USO5 yeast. The diacetyl, I 100% agree with that. This was I brewed this batch, and within 7 days, I had it in a keg. Due to life events happening, I had to rush this beer really quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I basically fermented it out for about 6 days. I had to cold crash it to get it into a keg because of some moves that are happening. And I had to get all my brewing equipment out of here. So,
oh gosh, never let life get in the way of beer, dude. I don't know what. I mean, come on.
Then and this was also my first batch on the grandfather.
Okay.
So the hop utilization seems like a little bit off than what the calculator was saying. I agree too. When I first tasted beer, it was way too more bitter than the calculators had told me. It was supposed to be
fairly substantially hoppy.
Yeah, I'm surprised how bitter it is, given that those are noble hops. You didn't add a tremendous amount of them for a 5-gallon batch. Yeah. So that's really interesting.
Well, it's probably about 2.5 ounce total of hops for the entire batch.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the grandfather's pretty efficient then, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so that explains 6 days fermentation. Definitely not long enough for a diacetyl rest. So,
man, you live on the islands. You need to like have a relaxed pace for your beers. Man, like be a little more, you know, NPR. It's like relax,
right?
Relax, and chill out.
More Ohana.
Let it sit. Yeah.
Yeah, I fermented at about 66 degrees until I cold crashed. I never wanted to raise the temperature for a diacetyl rest.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's even right, 66 man. Should be fine to clean up diacetyl. If it's left on the yeast long enough, it's not going to...
Yeah,
I think that's just a 5-6 day fermentation. Is just that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, my first time using the USO5, so I don't know if that's more of a diacetyl yeast that will, you know, create more diacetyl or not. I've never used it before.
No, I think it's your...
I don't have any experience with that.
I think it's just pushing it out under a week. I mean, that's pretty, you know, especially with your malt bill like that, I think that'll do that.
Yeah,
it's very ambitious.
I haven't had the problem with the O5.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any questions, Scott, specific to any of the feedback Brian gave you?
No, that's exactly what I was hoping for, was to validate the assumption I had. There was a lot of diacetyl in it, and then the recipe.
Well,
I know you said you didn't get a lot of corn in there. I used, you know, almost 10% corn. So you think I should jump that up quite a bit, maybe 15%?
I got plenty of corn.
I got plenty of corn.
That was my perception, but I think my perception of corn was being masked by the butter. Yeah. And I think clearly the number one problem in this beer is the diacetyl.
Yeah.
And you understand that. You knew why it happened. I think your recipe is probably fine. If you went back and... Why not? Just go for it. I'd say just brew this again, but brew it under more normal circumstances. You don't have to worry about moving. And just see what you think before you change a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Because, the diacetyl will kick a sweetness. But I think you'll find that Vienna is too much. But that's just me. I don't know.
It could be. Well, try it. Always like to say? Change one variable at a time.
That's true.
And the most important variable here is don't rush this out. Give it 2 weeks to ferment all the way out. And then, keg it up, bottle it, whatever. Send us some more. I'd like to see you do this again and... send us another go-round of this, because I think then we'll complain about Vienna. Let's just do it without diacetyl and see what happens.
I always like to say the plunger's under the sink. Don't be afraid to use it.
That's right.
And then I leave the room, and then my kid's like, I don't understand.
We've got some really good cream ale brewers in our club, the Mad Zymergist as well. And this is a beer. There's not a lot to hide behind. So
no,
keeping it clean is essential. And anything that pops out, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb. So it's a pretty nice job with the beer. I actually enjoyed it. I can get past the butter a little bit, but it's just to a point where it's just annoying enough.
I have a hard time myself finishing my own beer.
right.
There's no shame in dumping. I've done it myself.
That's true.
Or giving 6 packs to your alcoholic neighbor.
That's right.
That's also true. And then again, if you dump it.
Or 12 packs.
The plunger's underneath the sink. Mm. Don't be afraid. All right, Scott. Well, I guess that was it. So we'll let you split, huh?
All righty.
All right.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Sir.
Bye, dude.
Hope to visit again.
Oh yeah, for sure, dude. Who doesn't want to go to
some cool bottle shops out there? We did a lot of good beer tourism.
That's awesome.
Awesome. What else is cool? More Beer wants to change your malt game with Viking Malt. Hailing from Northern Europe, Viking Malt is a family-owned malt house since 1883 and is the largest specialty malt producer in the world. Their base malts are malted from Nullox varietals that don't contain the enzyme lipooxygenase, which leads to trans 2 nonanol in beer, which is responsible for those stale cardboard flavors. So head over to morebeer.com and brew with ingredients from the future. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back, and we're going to be drinking two different kinds of Guinness. Well, I guess it's technically the same kind of Guinness. It's Guinness Draft. But one's in a can and one's in a bottle because Brian Cooper just really wants to drink Guinness, and I think
that's
great.
Scientific here.
Yeah, why not? Let's just, in part of lining this with the dry Irish stout, which I think is the category, right,
yeah,
Brian?
Yeah, Irish stout. This is going to be
Irish stout.
Just so that during the break you can be sure you're ready. This is 15B Irish stout
15B.
In the 2016 style guidelines.
Nice. So we're going to figure out if we can tell the difference between can and bottle. Mm-hmm.
Was it 2016? 15?
The 15.
16?
Yeah. Jesus,
Brian. At some point in the past, it's the most recent one. It's fine.
People can make that mistake all the time. I think it would take some sort of grandmaster judge to know the difference. All right, everybody.
Maybe.
We'll be right back. This is Dr. Homebrew. Don't leave, please.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games. Now, back to the examination.
All right, thanks for sticking with us, everybody. We're about to drink some Guinness and, you know, do all that kind of fun stuff over here on Dr. Homebrew. Brian, what you reading, buddy?
Just some information I got on the Guinness website. And
nice.
It's how to pour the perfect pint. It really is an art pouring a proper pint of Guinness, of any stout, really. In a bar or a pub, it sometimes takes, you know, 5 minutes before you get your beer. You know, you have
that's
to,
true.
You have to pour that first, you know, 2/3 of it or 3/4 of a glass and let it kind of surges, and then you need to let it settle. And then you fill the glass the rest of the way to the top to get that perfect pint.
Yeah, so while you guys pour that, because we should get going and pour these beers are still in their containers, and that makes me very sad. I want to free the beer.
We shall free the beer.
I like to free the beer. So we had a representative from the American Guinness Brewery. Yes, that is correct. There is a brewery on the West Coast. I want to say it's in Maryland, but I may have just forgotten about that. And I had asked him on the show, you know, about that kind of old wives' tale, at least I heard growing up, for lack of a better term, as a home brewer, about trying to make Guinness at home, and people would tell me, well, you need to have a portion of it that's sour beer, so you have to have two batches, and blah, blah, blah. Is that true? And he goes, well, no, but what they used to do in Guinness, you know, in pubs is they used to serve like 3/5 of the beer from an old cask, and then the rest of the let that settle, and the rest of the beer came from a new cask, and that's kind of just where that two step pour process kind of comes from. It's not, I think it doesn't really do anything. You'll still get the same looking beer, but it's kind of an, from what he was saying, it's kind of an homage to how they used to pour it.
Yeah, do you remember back in the 90s? They used to have all these books about clone beers.
Yeah, written.
And nobody knew anything about anything. Like, oh, yeah, and that's partly, to my recollection, where this 5% sour thing comes from, was somebody writing a book that didn't know anything.
It was before that,
oh,
but yes,
it has
that
to
book
be
sucked.
Like,
clone
there was, there were several of them.
No.
It wasn't not to single out one, but, oh, God, they were all terrible.
Yeah.
They were the worst books, and it was before you had the internet where you could actually try to compare things.
Right.
Someone just pulled stuff out of their butt for so many of those books.
Yeah, that clone brews book was kind of the worst. All right, so here we go. We have a fresh sample of Guinness in front of us. And what did you say it was, Brian? 15B?
This is, the 15B.
Okay.
This is from the bottle, and we got the curved, the curved bottles with the toucan on the label. It's
all right.
A white bottle with the toucan.
Does this have the widget? Brian
stout.
Cooper and I were furiously arguing before the show started where if it doesn't have a widget or not. I think it does.
Well,
I remember it,
up,
it having the widget. I remember the bottles having the widgets in them.
There's no widget in this
there
bottle.
There is no widget in the bottle.
I know that
God
some,
bless.
Some of the bottles have a rocket-shaped widget in them. The widgets are different shapes in the bottles versus the cans. I guess the cans have a round one.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would make sense because that widget would just stop up the beer flow.
What these widgets do, yeah, I mean, this one is meant to be just drank out of the bottle, I guess. So
yeah.
So you can sip it that way. But the widget itself is meant for pouring into a glass and, you know, the proper way for all the people out there. But, yeah, you know, the widget, what it does is just shoots a little shot of nitrogen into the beer when that pressure differential, you know, when you crack the cap, the pressure instantly changes,
yeah,
and it shoots a stream of some nitrogen into your beer to give you that cascading creamy head that you expect from a Guinness.
You all know and love.
And this is right. Why I wanted to pour both versions is because I'm familiar, you know, we're all familiar with draft Guinness. We should be. But I wanted to taste the difference between a bottle with no widget and a can that has the widget. You can hear it when you shake the cans. So I know it's in there.
Well, should we bust that open?
And Brian, I really appreciate that. And I'm going to just for briefly mention that. So this is where my engineering brain takes over.
Uh-oh.
So several years ago, I remember reading that Left Hand makes that nitro milk stout.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I actually had some in Colorado when I was at CBC.
It's not bad. It's pretty good.
A really good beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were the first ones to be able to package with nitro in the bottle with no widget.
Right.
And apparently because it requires like a special seal, because the nitro will want to get out. It's a different size. It's a tiny molecule, right? Because you look at the periodic table, nitrogen's what, like 3 or 4? Carbon's 4, right?
Yeah,
I think
yes.
Nitrogen's like 3. So
yes,
it's a very small
on the periodic table.
But the point is nitrogen is like a really small, light molecule.
Right.
And carbon dioxide, it's a molecule. It's carbon and oxygen, two oxygen. So it's a lot bigger. Okay, they're still super tiny by our standards.
Sure, right, right. Compared to like
my penis.
Right.
But sorry,
on the same scale.
Where did that come from? So regardless, nitrogen's a lot harder to seal in. So Left Hand, my understanding is they about 6-7 years ago figured out how to be the first ones to package nitro without having to use a widget. And I suspect that wherever they got that technology from, they may have licensed that to Guinness. But not having to use the widget just makes the whole process simpler. And that's maybe why we're not getting one in the bottle.
It's interesting. Trying them both side by side, the can is creamier. Much creamier.
Yes.
Much creamier.
Yeah. The bottle tastes more like a stout.
Like a basic.
There's roasty in there. Yeah.
The bottle is slightly more roasty tart.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yes.
citrus tart, but mm-hmm. a little more tartness. Yeah, definitely get a. There's definitely a difference here.
It's mostly
That's
in the mouthfeel too, like to just mm-hmm. the way it fills your.
It's dry.
Palate.
It's a dry finish.
Wow,
it feels fuller when you have the nitrogen in that beer.
No, they're both really good, and the nitrogen's in the bottle, but I think it's escaping faster, and it's just kept in there differently.
Yeah,
in a way that just these beers are. Definitely similar, but there's definitely a difference.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're treated differently, you know, after the fermentation or after filtration or whatever. The carbonation process has got to be different, and that's got to change something. Is there more carbonation in the draft? Maybe it's in the bottle version. I mean, it tastes that way. It tastes a little more acrid. I don't know. I don't know if that's carbonation bite because the nitrogen, maybe there's more nitrogen in the can.
The nitrogen just kind of smooths out the coffee impression and the roasts and mm-hmm. just makes it float a little smoothly over your tongue.
Are you guys
and the other
seeing
has a little harsher bite?
I'm sorry, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you guys seeing a difference in the head quality, the head between the two?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. The one from the can looks like the classic Guinness, and the one from the bottle looks like just a normal beer you've poured, you know, where like there's little pockets of the actual beer showing through the kind of thin head.
Yeah,
right?
And as I poured it, I could see the actual kind of sheeting, you know, action that you see mm-hmm. when you pour a nitrogenated beer.
And Brian, you were saying the bottle is intended to be more drank from the bottle?
Yeah, this is for, you know, frat boys to drink on the beach, whereas the can is for us to sip by
the fire.
Fireside.
Yes, but
intellectuals.
Well, the can has a harp on it.
And tilt your glasses down a little bit.
This is for intellectuals only, is the Guinness in a can. The Guinness in the draft is for people who use
Spring
their
break.
Parents' Chevron card.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know.
Can I do that?
Sure. Use my parents'
Chevron card.
Yeah. All right, well, who wants to start off, and let's see if these beers line up with the BJCP guidelines, which, of course, everybody knows that anything written by a home brewer is vastly superior to anything written by a professional.
For some reason, the marketing on this bottle, though, just attracts me. I want to drink beer with the frat boys.
Well, I love the pelican. The pelican is so colorful.
It's the toucan.
And nice.
They're doing a lot of the throwback marketing. So what's interesting is the bottles have a wrap on them.
Yeah.
Right? So they're not printed bottles, which is super smart. But it's that white wrap with the toucan on it with the pint on his beak. And it's very clever because when I was, again, cutting my craft beer teeth, I'm Guinness all the time. That was my first legal commercial beer for my birthday. was a keg of Guinness that I had for my party.
No shit. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty badass. But I was obsessed with the older marketing of like the 20s and 30s of Guinness.
It was great.
I'm definitely not the only one because they've been bringing it back for like 2 years now. So it's pretty cool.
I found an image of the first toucan advertisement from 1935. If you look it up, there's articles about this. But it has a toucan with 2 pints of Guinness next to it. And he says, if he can say, as you can, Guinness is good for you, how grand to be a toucan. Just think what you can do.
I know. Stupid marketing. But the toucan, interestingly, has like a very much more like pointed beak. It's longer and more curved. It's definitely not as cartoony as the one I have now.
Stylized it a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But just think what toucan do.
It's like he's drinking toucans.
No shit.
I don't know.
All right, who's going to go first?
I whichever, yeah.
Brian Cooper, go first. I'm going to steal your artwork.
Okay.
You talk about the beer.
I'm going to drink the canned version here because I'm just liking this a little better right now.
I agree. Both have their merits, but I definitely am more, I guess, familiar or acclimated to the canned version than the bottle.
And not a lot of people know this beer is not much calorie-wise. It's about the same as Budweiser. You know, it's like dark. It's stout. It must be really high in calories and really high in everything.
Or alcohol.
Alcohol. Yeah. It's not. It's weaker than Budweiser and about the same level of calories. So.
Oh, yeah. My dad had one after golfing once. He was telling me, hey, ever have this beer called Guinness?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually really kind of light. And I said, yeah, it's dark. It doesn't have any relationship to alcohol.
How about instead of Guinness, it's Guinness and it's only for guys. It's for guys only.
So
it's about 30 years too late for that marketing.
Yeah. In the nose, you're going to get a light coffee-like aroma, and it's coffee, chocolate, a little cocoa, and a hint of roasted grains, but it's not smoky or burnt at all. It's just clean, smooth, chocolatey, and light coffee-like notes. So there really isn't much hop going on here. You can have a lightly earthier floral hop in this, but it's typically... not there. This one doesn't seem to have any notable hop. Appearance wise, it's pretty dark, but if you look at it, it's actually a kind of a deep brown with kind of ruby highlights to it. It's not pure black. Some stouts can go towards black and jet black, but those tend to be a lot roastier.
What's the SRN?
More bitter too.
36.
Boy, yeah, it can.
I don't think it's going in 40s because of those highlights, right?
Well, it can range 25 to 40. So starting at even 25, that's just kind of a medium brown.
Medium brown, right.
Getting up to 40, you're getting definitely towards black. But yeah, this one's probably closer to mid, lower to mid 30s than it is to anywhere near 40. So, But, appearance-wise, it also has this creamy light tan-colored head of just all fine bubbles, and that's all from the nitrogen. If you pour a carbonated version of it, it's going to look different. A carbonated stout, it's going to have bigger bubbles, and head retention may not be as good, and the mouthfeel is going to be a lot different, too. So, the flavor-wise, moderately roasted grain. It's got a substantial amount of bitterness when you get into it, but it feels smooth because of the nitrogenation. These nitro beers just smooth everything out, kind of. And the bitterness is not only from hops, of course; it's just from the roasted grains. You get a lot of bitterness too. The finish should always be dry on this beer. If you drink it and you get a lot of sweetness on the end of the finish. It's not attenuated enough. So you definitely want to keep these beers, keep that yeast happy. And probably if you're brewing one, mash at a lower temperature, 148 or thereabouts, keep those the beta amylases nice and happy and producing nice simple sugars for your yeast to ferment. So it's got like this, the bitterness that comes in and the flavor playing off of the sweetness of the cocoa and chocolatey kind of flavors. Gives you this bittersweet chocolate kind of character in the palate. And that's kind of, if you wanted to just describe this beer in a few words, it's almost, it's like a bittersweet chocolate bar almost, you know? There's, you're not getting any alcohol flavors. There's, you know, there's obviously a little bit in there, but it's not poking out. It's just smooth, not biting, and very dry. So that into the mouthfeel, creaminess is really what defines it to me. It's like you drink it and it just floats off your tongue and just is smooth and feels thicker than it really is. It's a pretty light beer with not a lot of body left in it. When you get a proper pour of a pint at a pub or, you know, pour one of the widget cans, you should definitely get a really super creamy mouthfeel. And again, that's where there's a big difference between these two samples that we have here. So,
The bottle one for me is rounding out a little bit now.
Yeah. It's not unenjoyable. It's
oh no, not at all. But as far as like those kind of roasty qualities that we're talking about, for me, they've just kind of rounded off, and it's not as creamy, obviously, as the canned one. It does taste like there's a little more carbonation to it, a little more CO2, where the canned version just always kind of seems flat, which is fine. It works, but, it's also my theory that you need to build a recipe to counter or to build off of the added creaminess and the sweetness of nitrogen. Yeah. You can't just nitrogenate any fucking beer.
Agreed.
I don't know if I've had many good commercial nitrogenated beers. It should work together. It shouldn't detract from anything. Nitrogen is just an ingredient in it, and it does add. There is a sweetness. Maybe it's a perception, but. Anyway, I don't know why. I found the patent information on the Guinness widget. It's called the Smoothifier. And the hole that the nitrogen comes out as is 0.61 millimeters. Just so you know.
What's the plus or minus on that?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. So in the late 90s when these cans first came out, and I was a new associate at a law firm, I was, my buddy who was also an associate and I, we're over at my house and we're drinking a lot of Guinness and we're pretty drunk. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning, some Saturday night. So we decide we're going to get some, we get really curious about how the widget works. So we get like some big old scissors out of my toolbox, cut it open, look at it. And being patent attorneys, we look up the patent and somehow I'm not sure how much we were able to read, given that we were pretty lit. That's like stuff patent attorneys do at 2 a.m. Let's look up the patent from the widget. How does this thing work? So it's just kind of a funny thing.
This is interesting. It talks about what happens during the filling process. So the pod, the widget, is inserted into the bottom of the can. It's blow molded with nitrogen. A laser zaps a hole in the pod. The pod is inserted in the bottom of the can. The can is filled with CO2, nitrogen stout, right? Nitrogenated stout. Mm-hmm. Nitrogen is present at 1.5 volumes minimum, up to 3.5%. Volumes is the number of volumes of gas which are dissolved in a unit volume of beverage at 760 millimeters of HG. So whatever. That's for smart people. I think this is really interesting. During the filling of the can, foam rises to the top of the can. This clears out the air. We all know that. We've all filled shit before. A charge of liquid nitrogen is added to the stout. So they put liquid nitrogen into the beer that's already nitrogenated, right?
So
it's at a low nitrogen CO2 mix. Beer gas mix, right?
Yeah.
Liquid nitrogen in the stout, and then they seal the can. As the liquid nitrogen boils off in the can during pasteurization, the top of the can pressurizes and forces the stout into the nitrogen pod, thus compressing the ambient pressure nitrogen in the pod. Mm-hmm. So that's how they get the gas in the pod.
Is
they just put it in the fucking can and fill on top of it, but there's no nitrogen in the pod yet.
Right.
So
it's pressurized. I was wondering how they get that in there.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
That's really fucking cool. Equilibrium.
That's the innovation. That's the spark of genius right
there.
Is doing that.
Equilibrium is reached at about 25 psi. So when the can is opened, the can quickly depressurizes to ambient temperature. The pod thus expels the stout contained in it, about 10 to 15 milliliters, at high velocity through the orifice, which now I'm horny. This causes high local strain of the stout at the plane of the orifice. The strain exceeds the cohesive forces holding the gases in solution. As a result, the nitrogen CO2 is liberated from the stout at the plane of the orifice.
Liberate your orifice.
So it rips apart.
So it's beer gas. It's a nitrogen CO2 combo. Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure is present in the bottle.
Yeah, that's crazy, dude.
Which is why the bottle has a little more carbonation, I think, right? I'm pretty sure there's beer gas in the bottle because a little more carbonation in the bottle than the can. No, not a lot.
And apparently they got rid of the widget. There are people online as far back as 2010 complaining that they took the widget out of the bottle. So I guess it's been a hot minute since I've had a bunch of Guinness in the bottle.
I haven't had it from the bottle in a while.
People like to complain.
There's a little story, too, on one of the articles I found that the first widget, you know, they invented it back in 69. They released it about 20 years later. It was a flattened sphere that sat at the bottom of the can.
Huh.
Well, it did its job when you served the beer cold, but when you opened something warm, the beer exploded everywhere after the can was cracked open. So they that's when they created the smoothifier. They re-engineered it and made the smoothifier, which is the round spherical widget that you see in the cans.
Nice. Fire.
The bottles used to have a plastic rocket-shaped widget.
Yes.
That was designed for those. But, yeah, they put a lot of thought into this. And
That's cool, man.
It approximates what you get when you get a draft Guinness.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be exactly the same.
Well, and can you imagine, you know, where Guinness would be without the smoothifier? I mean, that's, you know, millions, obviously multi-million dollar like process to perfect and whatever. But good on them for pushing for it because this is the only way you can really enjoy Guinness on the go without getting it to go.
Guinness on the go.
It seems like they've been pretty smart from the get-go. I guess, you know, Arthur Guinness in 1759, he signed a 9,000-year lease on a defunct old brewery. And that's what became Guinness.
That's pretty good, right?
St. James Gate, maybe, you know, like this is history, but like they were pretty smart. They had that lease until the year 10,759, I guess.
Longer than the British had Hong Kong.
It's true. I'm sorry, Brian. I think I cut you off, or were you done?
I'm pretty much done. I mean, just overall impression. It's just you know, it's a creamy and lightly roasty beer with a lot of coffee, always dry.
Yeah.
You know, persistent head and just you know, nice effervescence, kind of mouth feeling despite how light in an alcohol and you know, residual body the beer is. So
true.
It's kind of a cool beer that way, and it's a lot of fun to drink a pint of it.
Brian Shar, got anything to add? What do you think?
No, don't have a lot to add to what Brian said. I generally agree with him. I think the bottled one came out more roasted, and I wouldn't say acrid's a negative word. I wouldn't say that, but a little more tart and roasty from the bottle. But as they've warmed up and settled, and some of the gas has blown off, it's calmed down. I think the can to me is a little more close to the draft experience once you've poured it in a glass. But they're still both really close. Guinness is always, you know, year in, year out, they're one of those breweries that they just produce consistent product that's always high quality. You know, wherever you get it, one of the great things about Guinness is you go around this great land of ours and other places too, and you go to a bar, and you might not always go to like a good craft beer place, but pretty much everywhere has Guinness. So if you're stuck with, you know, maybe getting some macro pills or something, and, you know, you could usually get a can or a bottle of Guinness anywhere, and it's consistent and it's consistently good. I would prefer, you know, given my choice of the two of these, I'd take the can, but it doesn't mean it's a personal preference. I mean, these are both, you know, high 40-point beers. This is the iconic Irish dry, what they used to call Irish dry stout, now it's Irish stout in the guidelines. They're both just iconic. The can version's a little softer, a little creamier, a little less carbonated, a little less, maybe no CO2, I don't know. bottle, I would guess there's a little CO2 in here, a little more roasted malt. Still, it's they're both really good. And Brian, thank you for going to get these. And I think it's a really great idea. You had a great. We were talking about a commercial calibration. I really enjoyed that we got to compare the bottle and the can side to side.
That was a good job. What would you give it if you guys had to score this? What would you give it?
We have to score these beers.
Yeah.
Well, comparing it to the perfect, you know, pint poured in a good Irish pub.
To the guidelines. Yeah. If this was a homebrew.
That would be the top. But yeah, to get a homebrew to pour like this, boy, that would be, you'd have to have your own widget.
Yeah. But just flavor wise, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Right? Like don't worry about the widgetization or whatever, but
right.
If it makes you feel better, if it makes it easier, the bottle version, how would that stand up as a homebrew to this style? Because that's really what the point is, right? Are these beers, how do our style guidelines connect to these beers and vice versa?
Yeah, the homebrewed one is going to pour a lot more like the bottled version there.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely, you know, into the higher 30s for sure, at least.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little different, and I'm going to also carp a little bit about the guidelines. This is, the guidelines talk about medium to high hop bitterness. I'm like, really? And then you read to the end, and it's like, the level of bitterness is somewhat variable. I'm like, we're on a podcast. You can't see me roll my eyes like my 11-year-old daughter does.
That's true.
You can't say medium to high and then like in five sentences, well, it can be variable. It's like, no, that's bullshit, right? We've all had Guinness. This is not a high bitterness beer, okay? This is maybe, you know, low to medium.
I don't want my dry stouts to be bitter.
No, and there's some bitterness in here, but a lot of the bitterness comes from the roasted barley, right?
Yes.
This is not a beer you want to have be high. I mean, if you want a hoppy stout, get an American stout. I like a hoppy stout sometimes. It's not a Guinness. I definitely would rate the can a little bit higher. I would give the can maybe like a 43, 44. And the bottle maybe more like a 38, 39.
Okay, interesting.
But neither one. And I get when they kind of sit in your mouth, there's maybe a little bit of a perception of higher bitterness.
Yeah.
But again, that's a lot of that is the roasted barley.
Right.
Right. So this is, you know, in whatever they update the guidelines, Gordon, if you're listening, who knows? I'm sure he's hanging on our every word.
Oh, yeah.
Go back and think a little bit about this medium to high bitterness nonsense with
Gordon.
The Irish stout.
Let's call him right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very good, boys.
Yeah. One other thing to say about this beer, too, and it's debatable, but it's probably maybe just a rumor. I don't know. But in the old the 2008 guidelines, there was mention of a small percentage, perhaps 3% of soured beer. Being sometimes added for complexity, generally by Guinness only. But that, from what I've heard, is maybe kind of debatable. The brewery has never admitted to that or anything like that. But it's just some people, they do that supposedly just to kind of
they don't do that.
Yeah,
that's totally false.
It's a funny thing how the rumors like that get started. And then you have homebrewers and they're trying. Well, I've got a sour and add 3% of this, and then it's like. No, it's the perfect Guinness, you know.
Well, because then the bugs multiply, and what all that is it's just like, you know, as homebrewers in the 70s and 80s and 90s when we got turned on to Belgian beers.
Yeah.
And you go, "Oh my god, all these complex flavors and whatever." And then you go and you have a fresh Belgian beer or you go to like any fucking pale ale or whatever, any sort of beer that we used to have that you couldn't really get in distribution where you are, you go to that brewery and it tastes 100% different. It tastes totally because it's not baked in a car for 6 months. And, you know, back then the packaging was different, but especially with Guinness, to counter what Brian said a little bit, Guinness for me is very hot and cold as far as the freshness and the availability. Like when that beer goes, it kind of goes and it can get this tart, kind of spoiled character to it very easily.
Yeah.
And I've been burnt on 6-packs before too, or 4-packs. And, you know, even going out to pubs I'm leery of the Guinness because I don't know if they turn those kegs fast enough.
Yeah.
How long has that
lucky,
beer sitting
I guess,
in there? Right?
I don't know.
You've been lucky. Well, yeah, I think you've been hanging around kind of more the that kind of side of the bay where I think Guinness is a little more popular.
And now that I'm in Martinez, yeah, I got to be careful.
Yeah, you got to be careful. But I think older Guinness or heat damaged Guinness can accentuate those kind of roasted characters and can kind of give the a semblance of tartness. And that's I think where it came from.
I've had it like that too.
Yeah, where it's just
and even poured from someplace that doesn't have their lines very clean, or it's just this one tastes a little different.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very hard for me to go out. But I think that's where all that comes from. Yeah. Just like all the other kind of stuff we've always known about, homebrew. In the eight came from people in the 70s and 80s.
It's like people thought import beers tasted like skunk because Heineken. You know, it's like no, not how it's supposed to taste.
Right, and now
what
we know that
intentionally do.
Yeah, and now we know that Belgian beers aren't meant to be aged for years and years. They're kind of meant to be drunk fresh. In Belgium, they drink them fresh. They don't age their beers for 3 years, and then
surprisingly, a little hoppier than you're used to.
Right.
All that.
What is the problem with you, American?
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and wrap things up. This is Dr. Homebrew.
Awesome.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, you know you need protein to fuel results, but it's not easy when you're drinking the same bland, chalky shake every day. Stop punishing yourself and get to GNC for the best protein in the game, including all the hottest brands and crave-worthy flavors that'll keep you coming back for more. We're talking protein that legit tastes like cookies, your favorite cereals, indulgent desserts, and more. So bust out of your protein rut and actually look forward to those shakes with unbeatable protein at unbeatable prices. Fuel your fitness with protein at GNC. Yeah.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the five-star solution. Visit fivestarchemicals.com or call 800-782-7019, 800-782-7019, and get the five-star treatment today.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, everybody, welcome back.
Yeah, you're falling asleep over there, buddy. We're going to brew a super double espresso for you right now.
Welcome to NPR. Man. We're going to discuss.
Yeah, we're talking about being tired dudes. And it's interesting, man. Sometimes, my wife doesn't understand, like, I'm tired all day. We both got up at the same time, but, I thought I slept well. I took a nap today, which is cool. But I'm so fucking tired. And then, like, being on the show, you have to kind of put all your energy into it. And so afterwards, or at the breaks, you kind of feel, like, right now I don't feel tired, but at that break, I'm yawning. But now it's, like, cool. And so then afterwards, I have to sit here for half an hour and edit. I have to go to the store. Remember when I complained I had to go to the store?
You gotta go to the store,
hey,
man.
Yeah, here's the thing about being tired, man.
Tell me. Shit. I didn't even know that's how... you don't think it'd be that way, but, it do.
I just fell asleep on my microphone for a second. Sorry.
Next on NPR, a 12-part series about being tired.
Speaking of 12 parts of your... Speaking of parts of your homebrew that, I don't know. Have you visited the vault for homebrewers? It's White Labs' collection of specialty one-of-a-kind strains. We're able to pre-order and decide which strains are released to homebrewers. All you have to do is visit whitelabs.com/thevault and place a pre-order on the strain you'd like to use. Once it reaches 150 orders, White Labs will release the yeast and ship it directly to your doorstep. You can also do that for professional breweries, too. You just have to order a minimum of 1.5 liters through their yeastman.com or by contacting customer service. So check it out, whitelabs.com/thevault or, of course, yeastman.com. For all that kind of
good
stuff.
Get you and 150 of your homebrewing friends together from a big club and make them make something really weird, man.
That's right.
I want to see them release just like I don't know, beard yeast or something.
I'm going to unleash my inner junior high schooler and vote for WLP 069 or WLP 420.
There you go, baby. You got to do that.
Let's go for it.
Oh, all right. Well, we have a Grog Tag gift certificate giveaway, and I think we're going to obviously give it to Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Congratulations, Scott. You kind of won by default. But
this beer's already look good.
This beer's already look good, right? Else.
Default, should, yeah. The two sweetest words in the English language.
We should actually just send the gift certificate to, like, Guinness.
I would like to thank the Guinness Brewery as well, because they brew a damn fine product, and I'd love to go visit them and drink it. I'm told it tastes a little different fresh over there, for sure.
I heard it tastes extremely different. Yeah, absolutely. But
imagine what they do at St. James Gate when they got that coupon.
Yeah. No, they'd be like, oh, this is great. $40 to grogtag.com. Check it out. Yeah, it's, if you haven't heard that session before, we just did it 3 or 4 weeks ago. So check it out. It was actually really very interesting. And we tasted some beers that, that they made at the American Brewery. But, we also had the classics, too, which we also had the Guinness Extra Stout. Which is like 5.4 or something like
it's
that.
A little stronger.
That beer's really good. I went out and bought a 6-pack the next day. It's a very good beer. I forgot how much I really like kind of that stout character, because nobody makes everyone puts lactose and bullshit in their stouts, and it sucks, man. But
I don't recall
thanks
being
to the Guinness people.
Invited to that show you guys did.
You are you just look at the calendar. You know exactly when it is. Come in whenever you want.
What about Ears Up podcast?
Come in the Ears Up podcast. We're recording. I don't know. Oh, recording May 2nd. We're going to be interviewing the people from the Walt Disney Family Museum in San Francisco.
Ooh,
if you
nice.
Haven't been to that Walt Disney Family Museum, great place to go. EarsUpPodcast.com. I wasn't going to bring it up, but Brian brought
it up.
I'm
going to come join your show sometime.
Come on, that'd be great.
After I go with my kid.
There we go.
It's a great show.
All right. I think that's it. I think we've covered everything. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in to Dr. Homebrew. Spread the word if you know any homebrewers or people who just like beer, or you want to learn a little bit more about homebrewing in general. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you want to be on the show,
email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and tell me what your beer is and what you want out of it, and we'll get you on.
There we go.
Cheers.
All right, everybody. Thanks a lot, and we'll, see you.